It's called The Black Man Is God. It's called The Black Man Is God. Next album. This is for the children. You know what I'm saying? I got this idea from myself, of course, but this is for the children. I got.
Make this prediction. This will be the biggest upset in all fighting history. It'll be the easiest fight of my life.
You think your cousin can whoop me? You really do? Anybody on your watch? Anybody in my family?
He's young. He's handsome.
They know it.
He's a poet, a prophet.
The goal ain't have a net. Who would have dreamed from karaoke to cassette? I met OB as an OG in the Jackson. Nah, I was legends, rest in peace, Pop's a legend, Mike Corey and Sean Jordan was the essence of the young chorus where we grew from. Seemed like a second, now they less important to the new sun. I guess today weighs more than yesterday. It's morbid to suggest that they will come for them too. When it's a brother younger than you, who humble and who? Used to coach him, now he coached and blew up, who knew? He caught you on a rough night, you were stumbling through. Now he telling you to get yours, get yours.
All of you reporters made it hard on them.
Check, check. Goal ain't have a net. Goal ain't have a net. What up, Scheme? What up, world? Justin Hicks is back. The preseason podcast of the year, Hip Hop Sports Report, is in the building. This is late Friday night, January the 17th. No, the 16th. I lied. Your boy's got a birthday coming up. Getting old, man. I've watched a lot of football in my years, and that might explain the sheer dominance. The sheer dominance that I've put forth in picking these games. A casual 5-1. All in a day's work. This is a little light work morning stretch, you know what I'm saying? 5-1 on the picks. 5-1 against the spread. But you know, what do we know? You know, historically, a 63.5% win percentage on picking playoff games. But what do we know? I mean, we just, you know, just a guy with a microphone, you know what I'm saying? No national platform, no pyrotechnics over here, no pizzazz, none of that stuff. Just hard-hitting, accurate analysis. That's all you get. Hey, I got to tell y'all the truth, man. Those games were so close last week. Like, I picked 5 out of 6 games correctly. However, it was hard to shake the fact that like 5 out of those 6 games came down to the final possession. And they're coin flip games at that point. A bounce of the ball here, a lucky break there, a whistle here, or whatever there, and you got different outcomes. But that's part of the playoffs. That's part of the deal. And, you know, sometimes some of it you could see coming. Like, you know, shame on anybody who believes in Trevor Lawrence. I mean, come on now. Over Josh Allen, no less. I think we knew Tall Baker was going to throw a pick with the game on the line to lose the season. I think that was predictable. Maybe that's just me. But, you know, okay, to each their own. But, nah, we'll get into it, man. Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast is happening. And we are able to be found on X at HHS Report. You can find us on Facebook as well. And, of course, the website is hiphopsportsreport.com. 5-1. It was a good week for us in the wild card round. The only incorrect game we predicted was the Eagles and the 49ers. So I guess shout out to my man Terry Palmer, who I was trying to get him on the show this evening. Maybe we'll get him next week. He bested me. I told you guys about our little gentleman's, not it wasn't really a gentleman's bet, there was actually real stakes, but our wager that we had at the beginning of the season, where I thought that the Eagles would make it back to the NFC title game. He was right. I was wrong. I thought the Eagles would actually make it back to the Super Bowl, and boy did they not. I'll touch on that in a little bit. But that was the only game I got straight up. The only game that I got wrong straight up. The only game that I miscalculated on from a spread perspective was the Texans Steelers game. And I told you guys that I gave the Steelers the edge there from a point spread standpoint, simply because it was out of respect purely. even though I don't really respect them, I was just being kind. And as you can tell, I was being far too kind, because that team is garbage and their coach is gone, and you know, Mike Tomlin's up out of there. Speaking of coaching searches, I'll just touch on the Browns search really quickly. Yeah, it kills me, and I tweeted about this earlier today. It bugs me when I hear people talk about the job openings and who has a good opening and who doesn't and that kind of thing, and which job openings are better than others. And I hear people say, you know, when they factor into the equation the quarterback, which makes total sense. So Baltimore is perceived to have the best opening because they have the best available quarterback in Lamar Jackson. And I get that, okay? And I get that the quarterback's the most important singular position. But everybody says the second most important position is pass rusher, right? Edge, that's what everybody says, that's the second most important position on a football team. Well, the best edge in the NFL is Myles Garrett. And as I said last week, the best football player on earth, in my estimation right now, is Myles Garrett. He plays in Cleveland. But nobody's saying that the Browns have a good coaching opening. Nobody's saying that the Browns' coaching job is anything to write home about. In fact, the Browns are getting laughed at by a lot of people, which, again, I get that to an extent. But if we're looking at rosters and we're looking at which job is the best, who you can turn around quickly into a contender, I get that the Browns offense and special teams were in the toilet. I'm not mincing words about that. But what I would say is that the Browns defense, in my opinion, is arguably the best unit in the AFC North today. So if you look at offense, defense, special teams for all four teams, of those 12 units, the Browns' defense is the singular best unit. I think you could argue the Bengals' offense, but I think the Browns' defense is the best unit out of all those units. And so, and with the best player, you know, Myles Garrett is the best player. So it's kind of like, if he's that good and he's at the second most important position and he's the best in the world at it, why is it that everybody, like, right? And he's coming off his best season, and people just still don't take that seriously, and they say, oh, well, the Giants job was clearly better for John Harbaugh. Really? Why? Because they got Jackson Dart? Because they got Dart, that's why? Like, I don't buy that at all. But there's some truth to it in the standpoint that the market is what it is, and it dictates what it dictates, and that's why you have the 30-year-old dude interviewing for the Browns job, which I'm not too keen on that. I would rather them have a dude that's older than Myles Garrett actually be the coach. But we'll see how that shakes out. I think we see where this is headed. It's headed towards a very young, offensive-minded guy. That's where it seems to be headed, to Cleveland. I don't know if they're going to retain Jim Schwartz under that scenario, because Jim Schwartz is the current defensive coordinator. So, and he applied for the job, more importantly. So it's like, if he doesn't get the job, then you're going to hand it to some child. And now Jim Schwartz has to answer to this child. Like, that doesn't sound like a great dynamic. So now you're losing the best coordinator over the best unit in the division. Like, it's a little, it's not easy. It's not an easy thing for the Browns to navigate, but that's why they get paid the big bucks. So navigate it, please, and put a winner out there for Cleveland, because they deserve it. Okay, let's recap really quickly. All time, 101-58. I got my 100th correct prediction in the playoffs in the history of this website last week. So we're now 101-58. That's a 635 win percentage. Wild card round, 42-26. That's a 618 win percentage. Divisional round is where I clean up, y'all. 38-14 all time. That's 73% of the time I'm giving you winners. Okay? 73%. Conference championship, 14-12. That's just under 54%. And Super Bowl, 7-6. That's just under, or just over 58%. This is a week where all four road teams could win. I talked about last week how there was no juggernaut and how all these teams were with, you know, had a puncher's chance against any other one, and that the field was just wide open in a way that we hadn't seen in a long time. I talked about that last week. I really believe that that's the case, because as much as I'm jokingly gloating or whatever about the good week that I had making picks last week, the reality is that that was very difficult. A lot of those games went down to the final drive, and this week it only gets harder. Like, we're going up a level this week. I mean, if y'all think I was being silly this time around on the podcast, just wait till next week. If I go 4-0 or something like that, like, I'm really about to be acting a fool, because these games are extremely difficult. They're extraordinarily difficult to predict. I think there's a good case to be made for all these games, or all these teams in these games, and I personally have some conflicting philosophies that make picking these winners hard for me personally. Like, there's things that, one rule of thumb that I typically go by, but then it counteracts another rule of thumb, and it's like I gotta pick a lane, you know what I mean? But yeah, we have a one seed versus a 6 seed, and a 2 versus a 5 in the AFC, and then a 1 seed versus a 6 seed, and a 2 versus a 5 in the NFC. But don't let the seeding fool you. Again, these teams are strikingly similar in their capability to go the distance. We'll start with the first game. It is tomorrow afternoon. The Bills travel to Denver to play the Broncos. The Broncos are favored by 1.5 points at home. The Bills opened as the favorite, a road favorite, and then that line has since switched to Denver. My first thought when I thought of the Bills going to Denver after they had defeated Jacksonville last week, I'm like, man, Denver is a hard place to play. I don't think that Denver gets enough credit for being as difficult of a place to play as it is. I think there are few venues in the NFL today that are harder to win in than Invesco Field, or whatever they call it, what used to be Mile High Field. I think they have a real advantage, a real home field advantage in Denver. I think the Broncos should be favored in this game. But we should not forget that the Bills destroyed Denver last year, like literally took them apart after that opening touchdown that Bo Nix threw. It was a cakewalk after that in Buffalo when these two teams met. Now, granted, it's not the same two teams. Got it, right? But the narrative coming into last week was that this was the most pressure that Josh Allen has ever been under. He's under the most scrutiny, and no other six seed is going to be viewed at as a failure if they lose, except the Bills and whatever. And a lot of people were on Jacksonville last week, and lo and behold, Buffalo took care of business. So now that the Bills got one under their belt, is the pressure off? I wonder. You have to wonder. I don't know. I feel like the pressure could be off them a little bit. Like, they're not quite as, you know, I mean, I wouldn't go as far to say that the Bills are playing with house money, but maybe they're playing with a little house money, like a few dollars. Maybe they hit a slot machine for $10 or something, and they're playing with a little bit of house money, but like not thousands. I don't know. I just know that they're not quite in the same predicament. It doesn't feel like. I thought people were undervaluing the Bills last week. I'm like, they went 12-5 or something last year. Like, why are we not taking them seriously? And as it turns out, they ought to be taken seriously. Look no further than Josh Allen's performance when the Bills were down in Jacksonville. According to Pro Football Focus, when the Bills were trailing last week in Jacksonville, Josh Allen was 14 of 16 for 195 yards, 3 total touchdowns, and a 133.1 passer rating. You new age nerds can poke fun at passer rating all you want, but that's a damn good one, okay? We know Josh Allen's the truth. He's the best football player playing in these playoffs. I don't think too many people would argue with that. I've heard people now suggest that he's clear-cut, hands-down, the best player in the world, which, you know, I disagree with. I still think that that goes to Myles Garrett. But if you want to say Josh Allen's the best quarterback, I have no issue with that. It's funny because people for the longest would say, oh, you can't say that. It's Mahomes. It's Mahomes. Well, after another mediocre Mahomes season, I think people are starting to accept the fact that he might not be the best right now anymore. Not to say that he can't get the juice back, but that's just what it is right now. What I like about Denver is I like their offensive line, man. And you know, if you listen to last week's show, you know how much value I put into that. I put a lot of stock into whether or not you can move some furniture up front. And the Broncos line can move some furniture. In fact, their defensive line can as well. Their defensive line led the league in sacks this year by a comfortable margin. I think it was in the mid to high 60s in terms of sacks for the season, which I also value extremely highly in the playoffs. So you have a team in Denver who can rush the passer and who is great at run blocking and pass blocking. That's an awesome combination to have. What's not awesome is Bo Nix. Hey, man, look, he's been a little better than even I thought he was going to be since he came into the NFL. But I think that's more so a product of him getting so much coaching. I mean, he's gotten so much coaching. The guy was in college for like 9 years. You can't get that much coaching and then be whack at the college level. So then he comes into the NFL, and now he's getting Sean Payton-level coaching. And so I just think that that's – he's gotten advantages that a lot of other quarterbacks don't get. Let's put it that way. He got the transfer a bunch of times before that was fashionable. He played forever in college. He comes in, he gets Sean Payton as his leader and his coach. That's a pretty good setup for Bo Nix. And he's still average. You know what I'm saying? He's still like average at best. So that should worry anybody. Because we know, I mean, he's had his moments. I don't want to take all credit away from him. That game he had against Kansas City this year was impressive. And he's had some other good games here and there. But, I mean, I don't think anybody's like looking like, okay, Bo Nix is going to win this game for the Denver Broncos. Like, no, it's going to be the defense, and it's going to be the defense trying to slow down Josh Allen. That's it. Denver won 14 games this year. They went 14-3, but they won a lot of close ones. But what I find myself looking at the Broncos depth chart, it's really not that impressive to me. You look at their skill positions, it's like Troy Franklin and Cortland Sutton, I think, is pretty good, but like I don't think he's a number one. He's a number one in Denver. I don't think he's like a true number one. I think he's a good player. I would like him on my team, but I don't think he's amazing by any stretch. Their tight ends, their running backs, you know, R.J. Harvey, the rookie, I think he topped out at like 550 yards on the season. His high for a single game this year was, I think, 75 yards. I mean, there's not a lot of big playmakers on that side of the ball for Denver. So you're really looking at Sean Payton to scheme something up. You're not really looking at the offense to win this game. I mean, if you're Denver, you're hoping that this thing hovers around 20 points and you can just hold down Josh Allen and hope that he has a bad game where he gets banged up again. Here's the thing, though. Ed Oliver's coming back. Curtis Samuel's coming back. So the run defense of the Bills is a problem. And we saw it last week in Jacksonville. The Jags kind of went away from the run game. But Buffalo's defense is opportunistic. And with Ed Oliver coming back, maybe they can become a little bit better at stopping the run. The Bills' offense is also getting Curtis Samuel back. And James Cook really wasn't much of a factor in Jacksonville. So you have to figure that in addition to Josh Allen doing his thing, part of their game plan is going to be to get James Cook going and take some of that pressure off of Josh Allen so he's not trying to have to drop back and pass against this great pass rush and defense every single trip. Now, Denver's run defense is very good, so this is where the game is most likely going to be won or lost. But here's one other thing for you to keep in mind. Saturday will mark Josh Allen's 14th playoff game and Sean McDermott's 15th playoff game. And while Sean Payton has coached in many playoff games himself, this will be Bo Nix's second game. Denver is still relatively new to this, in spite of the fact that Buffalo has been here year after year after year. That alone is not going to be enough to win the game for them. But I do believe that Josh Allen and the greatness that he displayed last week is not a fluke. I think that James Cook will have a slightly better performance. And I think that this game is going to come down to Bo Nix's ability to win it. And we saw what Buffalo was able to do when faced with a marginal quarterback who was forced to try to win the game. He couldn't do it. So even with the injuries, even with the tough place to play, being in Denver, Colorado, and the thin air and the altitude and all that stuff, give me the Buffalo Bills to win and cover and make the AFC Championship game once again. Saturday night, y'all. Saturday night. The 49ers are 7-point underdogs in Seattle. That's a big number. That jumped out to me right away. quick post-mortem on the Eagles. I mean, they had four drops last week, all on third down. It seemed like A.J. Brown dropped like five passes by himself. They didn't have Lane Johnson last week in Philly, which I thought they were going to get him back, and they didn't. I think that hurt him. It's been a crazy 4 years for the Eagles, if you really look at it. 4 years ago, they were in the Super Bowl. Probably should have won. Probably outplayed the Chiefs for most of that game and should have won it, but lost. The next year, they look like things are rolling along. They start off like 12-0 or whatever, and then they just have one of the most epic collapses down the stretch, and they get embarrassed in the first round of the playoffs by Baker Mayfield and Tampa Bay. Then last year, they bounce back from that, and they win the freaking Super Bowl. And then this year, they have the funk again, and they got that funk in them all season again, just like they did at the end of the year 2 years ago, and they lose in the wild card round at home. Very strange. I don't remember a four-year stretch of any team like that with the ebbs and flows to that extreme. But the Niners did it, and Brock Purdy threw two picks, and they overcame that, and the 49ers lost George Kittle, and they overcame that. And so it seems like the injuries will catch up with the 49ers, but it hasn't yet. So it's like, well, when is that going to happen? Well, it might happen Sunday, because the Seahawks are a damn good team. They're the one team that I think most people look at, and I think they're the one team that people are most impressed by the eye test. I think it's Seattle. I don't think there's a juggernaut in this thing, but if there's one that looks the most like a juggernaut, it's the Seattle Seahawks. Look no further than my man Jackson Smith and Jigba, hashtag draft more Buckeyes. JSN has 119 catches on the season for a shade under 1,800 yards and 10 touchdowns. And we know he's a big game player, because do you remember what he did in the Rose Bowl 3 years ago, 4 years ago? Do y'all remember what he did? I bet y'all don't remember what he did, which is why I'm going to remind you right quick. JSN had 15 catches for 347 yards and 3 touchdowns in one game. That wasn't like in like, oh, that was a hell of a playoff run. No, that was in one ball game he did that in the Rose Bowl. So JSN can put on the cape when he wants to in the big games. We know this. And he's going to have to do that if they're going to win this game, because the Seahawks are trotting out a banged up Sam Darnold to try to win the game. And I don't hate Sam Darnold. I don't really like Sam Darnold that much these days, but I don't hate him. I recognize that he's good, and he's one of the higher-end quarterbacks in the league at this point. But it's also worth noting that he has this tendency to kind of turn into a pumpkin when things don't go so great. And most of the time, although he didn't against the Rams earlier this year. But Darnold's only got one playoff game under his belt, and that was last year. And he threw for 245, 1-1 with a 77 passer rating. And his team lost after winning 14 games. The Vikings had to go on the road to play the Rams, and they got beat. So now here's Sam Darnold again, this time in Seattle. He's got an oblique injury. It's not looking great for him, and to the point that they're talking to Drew Lock might play. I think Darnold's going to play. I don't think Darnold's going to allow this opportunity to slip by. I think he's going to do whatever he can to get out there on the field and play, as he should. But if we got to see Drew Lock, lots of luck. And I mean, just the fact that Drew Lock is in play, like if he doesn't, if Darnold can't give it a go or can't be himself or gets re-injured or something like that, then there's a real chance we're seeing Drew Lock in this game, and that is not going to bode well for Seattle. Here's the thing, though, with the Seahawks. And again, I get that most people like them. I think most people are picking them. I think most of the money's coming in on them. They have a 7-point advantage here on the spread of the game. Here's what I don't like for Seattle, and they're fun to watch, and their defense flies around and stuff. I got a lot of respect for them. Here's what I don't like, and I'll say it for the fourth time. Here's what I don't like for Seattle. I think this is the worst case scenario for them. They are facing a 49ers team that will not be scared of them. They will not be intimidated by that arena or that stadium with the overhang to make it louder than it actually is. They're not afraid of their fans who are still getting ripped off by beers that are the same size as a medium as a large, and they're paying large prices. They're not intimidated by none of that stuff. They're not intimidated by the rain. They're not intimidated by the birds or the seagulls or whatever they are. They're not intimidated by none of that stuff. Okay, the 12th man with their little flags. No, that's not gonna work on the 49ers. You know why? Because the 49ers play there all the time. They play there every year. They played there earlier this year and won, mind you, in week one. So now, not only do you have a 49ers team that's not scared of you, so whatever aura of invincibility you have as the one seed playing at home, that doesn't exist when you're playing a division rival. And then they just beat San Francisco on January 3rd. Now, granted, that bodes well for their ability to win this upcoming game because, okay, we just saw them beat the 49ers, and the 49ers did not look good in that game at all. But Seattle didn't look all that great either. I mean, if we're being honest, defensively they looked great. Offensively, they left a lot to be desired. And that was with the San Francisco team that was without Fred Warner and Bosa and no pass rush to speak of, and they still weren't that impressive offensively. And then we know that the 49ers have the head coach advantage, because Mike McDonald's never coached a playoff game in his life. And everybody's lauding Kyle Shanahan for this epic coaching job this year, which, by the way, he is doing. He's having an epic year coaching the 49ers. And he's been to Super Bowls, plural, okay? Brock Purdy's been to a Super Bowl. Brock Purdy's been to NFC Championship games, plural. Brock Purdy's no stranger to this moment. He's no stranger to going on the road and winning. He just did it. Sam Darnold's the one who's never won a playoff game. He's never had expectations in the playoffs. His coach has never coached in the playoffs. The pressure of being the one seed at home, it's a real thing. And you come out flat in that first quarter and lay an egg in the first quarter, it can get scary real fast. And those fans can get tight real quick. I think all of the psychological advantage lies with the 49ers in this game. And although they may not be the better team on paper with all the injuries, I still think the Niners have what it takes to win this game. Fred Warner may come back. He might actually play. And the Niners can't rush the passer, which is a big issue for me, but that didn't seem to hurt him against Philadelphia. And it didn't seem to hurt him earlier in the year when they split with the Seahawks. And it didn't even hurt him when they lost to the Seahawks 2 weeks ago and Seattle put up like 13 points and won that game. So, I got to say, y'all, I got the Niners winning. I got the Niners winning and obviously covering the spread. I think the loss of Kittle is devastating, but the injuries haven't really meant much to this 49ers team by and large. As long as Brock Purdy stays upright and they're not letting Christian McCaffrey play quarterback. Matter of fact, I don't know why Juwan Jennings is not the emergency quarterback at this point, but I really do feel like the 49ers have something in them that will not allow them to lose this game to this team that they just lost to 2 weeks ago that they see all the time. You're telling me that Robert Saleh can't out-scheme Sam Darnold in a big game? The guy who's most famous for saying that he was seeing ghosts on Monday Night Football? Come on, man. I like Seattle. I would not be shocked if they won. I'll be happy for them if they do win. It's all love for the Seahawks. But I'm picking the 49ers, man. I am. Texans and Patriots is the third game. That's on Sunday. This line may move, I think, before it's all said and done because I feel like the from what I've researched anyway, the money and the number of bets is all coming in on Houston. You watch NFL Live this week. They had like five people picking games. All of them pick Houston. I've heard podcasts today where everybody's picking Houston. And I told y'all last week that Houston was like a dark horse Super Bowl contender. And they looked the part defensively on Monday night against the Steelers. But I also told y'all that the Steelers was garbage. Okay? We knew that they was garbage. So I guess we shouldn't be that shocked that the Texans eviscerated them in front of the world. And that they are going to basically push Aaron Rodgers and Mike Tomlin into retirement. We should not be thrown off by that. This is a fascinating game because the Patriots have lost one time since September 21st. I said September 21st. The Texans haven't lost since November 2nd. So something's got to give. Drake May looked shaky in the first half against the Chargers, but he settled in a bit in the second half and the light bulb went off for the entire team. I think the Patriots were a little nervous at the start of that game last week, and the Chargers probably could have taken advantage. They just didn't have the horses to do it. Once the light bulb went on for the Patriots, they knew that that the Chargers ain't have shit for them. Like, it was almost like watching a fight, like a boxing match. Like, the fighters are feeling each other out. They're feeling each other out. One guy starts to get, you know, put a few combinations together. The next thing you know, they realize that the other fighter cannot hurt them. And that's like, okay, I'm about to let my hands go, and we're gonna put this thing away now. Like, they can't hurt us. And once you come to that realization, and then once your opponent comes to that realization, it's a wrap. And I think that's what happened last week between the Chargers and the Pats. So while the Patriots were not overwhelming in that win, were the Texans, were they that overwhelming? Certainly not on offense. CJ Stroud, I don't know what the hell happened to him. This is not his first playoff rodeo, but it sure looked like it. It feels like too many people are on the Texans. And with Nico Collins having a concussion and missing the game now, you look at it and it's like basically just Christian Kirk on their offense. Like, they don't have any tight ends that you're scared of. Woody Marks is all right. Nick Chubb is my guy, and I ride for Nicholas Jamal Chubb. I always will. But I don't think he's going to be carrying the Texans to victory. And I don't know if Woody Marks is either. So if you take Christian Kirk away, what do you really have to be worried about if you're New England? Like, I think Kirk caught the Steelers by surprise. But with no Nico Collins out there to keep the defense honest on the other side, I don't know how Christian Kirk alone is going to be the only threat that beats the Patriots in New England. New England's a much better team than the Steelers are. Much better. So I don't know. You know, maybe Drake May is not going to be as dominant as he's been throughout the course of the season, because, again, everybody likes to point to the schedule that the Patriots played, and it wasn't very good. And now they're getting a real live pass rush with Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter in Drake's face. But Drake can move around a little bit. And I think to take advantage of that overzealous pass rush, I would bet that you can expect a big game from Travion Henderson and Ramondre Stevenson. Stevenson actually had a really good game receiving out of the backfield on Sunday. And I think between him, and we know Travion can receive out of the backfield, I think you may see them worked into the game a little bit. Expect to see some screen passes and things like that to the running backs in New England. I think they can scheme something up here. Josh McDaniels can. He's no stranger to these big games, and neither is Mike Vrabel. Everybody's on Houston, and I really wanted to pick Houston. I was like about to do it earlier today. Like, I was on Houston, and then I just, like, everything I was kept seeing, it's like everybody's pointing to Houston like they're going to win this thing, and seemingly ignoring the fact that A, their offense is not in good shape right now, and B, the Steelers probably just aren't good. They're just not. So I'll take the Patriots. I'm going to take the Pats to win and the Texans to cover, just because I do think there's a real way that the Texans could win this game. So to protect myself, I'll take the points. But I'll take New England to win, and we'll have a Buffalo-New England AFC Championship game, which would be fascinating on a lot of levels, and I think would be like a nightmare scenario for Bills fans if they were to lose to that team in that game. But that's how I see it shaking out. New England has the better offensive line, I think, than Houston, and I think that stuff's going to catch up. I think Milton Williams is going to wreak havoc on the interior with Barmore. Like, I think that Patriots defensive line is nothing to sneeze at. Their defense in general is nothing to sneeze at. I don't know if Christian Gonzalez is going to play. I know he's having a concussion situation as well, but I think the Patriots have enough to get it done. I look for their running back to have a big game, and it's kind of a Stephon Diggs revenge game, I suppose, too. So give me the Patriots. And lastly, the Rams versus the Bears. Amazingly, I had the Bears last week and they won. I don't know how they pulled that game off, down 18 points against Green Bay. They got no pressure on Jordan Love throughout the entire game, or so it seemed. Jordan Love had 300 yards passing, 4 touchdowns, no picks. He only was sacked one time. He didn't fumble the ball, and they lost the game. I don't know how the Packers do that. How do you lose that game? Your quarterback throws four TDs, no picks, and you lost? Like, that is... And 300 yards. Not like... It wasn't like 150 yards with four touchdowns. He threw for 300 yards. I don't know how you do that. And the Rams beat out the Panthers. The Panthers covered, as I predicted. But were you really impressed with the Rams last week? Everybody's been carrying the Rams on this pedestal for the majority of the season. Like, are we sure? Are we sure? I picked them to win, but are we? I mean, like, they were really having trouble. Bryce Young put 31 points on them. If Bryce Young is throwing 31 on you, like, I mean, that's not nothing. It's not nothing. And maybe the Rams are better than the Bears. And maybe they are the best team in the NFC. I think there's a case to be made for that. But to me, I just haven't seen enough from them. We know Stafford can play. We know Puka Nacua is amazing. We know Devontae Adams got something left in the tank. Once you get beyond that, it's like, okay, then what? I think they can run the ball. And in fact, that will be the key to this game. The Rams' ability to run on Chicago, because Chicago got ran on a lot this season. Miraculously, they came out in the second half against the Packers and shut Josh Jacobs the down. Okay, he was going nowhere in the second half. I think he had like one run beyond 1 yard or something like that, some kind of crazy stat like that. Josh Jacobs was going nowhere fast, and man, did they have a celebration last week. I am scared to death, and I'm not the first person to point this out, but I'm not the last. I probably won't be the last either, but I am scared to death when I see a team like the Bears celebrate the way that they did to win a playoff game. That was their Super Bowl. And usually when a team wins their Super Bowl, they are dead in the water the following week. That's exactly what I saw from Chicago. I mean, the cheese grater hats and the celebrations, like the way that they carry themselves, you know, Ben Johnson in the locker room, F the Packers this and F the Packers that and F those guys. And it was a lot. It was a lot. But I feel like the Rams need to figure out how to run the ball if they're going to win this thing. I think their strength, though, is really passing the ball. But there's some problems in that scenario. Number one is the Bears are great at catching the football defensively. Like, their corners have great ball skills. And as I pointed out last week, they led the NFL in interceptions this season. They did not catch one last week, but they might this week. And Stafford's not afraid to throw them a couple. We know this. By the way, did I talk about last week how the Jets didn't catch a pick all season? How do you play 18 weeks, 17 games, and not catch one interception? I don't know how that's possible. I should do a segment about that, like every podcast, just about how unbelievable of a statistic that is. But getting back to the matter at hand, the Bears, not only have they have trouble stopping the run, as they average the 6 most rushing yards allowed per game this year, they also lost TJ Edwards, the linebacker, in the game last week. So if the Rams are going to have any hope to win this thing, they're going to have to run the ball, and I would run the ball and run it some more and run it some more right down Chicago's throat. That would be my game plan. If they cannot do that and they rely on Matthew Stafford, I can understand why they try to do that, because he's their MVP candidate. He might be MVP this year, and I get that. But I don't think that's the shrewd decision. Let me tell y'all about Matthew Stafford's statistics in outdoor elements and conditions this year. So Matthew Stafford completed 65% of his passes this year for 4,700 yards, 46 touchdowns, and 8 picks. But he played 2 games this season not in a dome, where the temperature was below 50 degrees. And in those 2 games, his completion percentage dropped 5%. He only threw for 512 yards combined in the 2 games. He threw 4 touchdowns, and he threw 5 interceptions. It is at this point in the podcast where I'd like to whip out my phone and pull up the weather report. As you guys know, I am stationed in the North Chicago suburbs as we speak. Right now, it is 27 degrees outside. It feels like 14. on Sunday night when this game is going to be played, around 6 p.m., the high will be at under 20 degrees. It'll be about 18 degrees. The low for the day is 9 degrees. With the wind chill, it'll probably be it'll feel like the negatives. It'll with the wind chill, it'll be like negative 4 degrees at that game. That is not a recipe for success if you're the Rams. And people may wonder to what extent that's a real thing. And I think that that's fair in the sense that we did see the Rams go out to Philly last year and almost beat the Eagles in the divisional round of the playoffs. But two things. Number one, they didn't. They did not beat them. They lost that game. And number two, I think it's going to be even colder for this game than it was for that game. Playing on Lake Michigan, it's a real thing, man. And, you know, we've watched quarterbacks from warm weather climates and domes go outside, and they're just not the same. You could argue Matthew Stafford wasn't the same last week against the Panthers playing outside. But when you get into those cushy domes, man, and those plush domes with the fake crowd noise and the controlled temperatures and everything, it's a different ball game than going in the elements. And I'm not saying that the Rams cannot go out and execute in that situation, but it's very plausible that they just don't. That they just don't. And Stafford looks extremely human in that situation. And by the way, I told you guys last week, I went to the game in Soldier Field. The Browns from Cleveland came and played the Bears. I was there. It was the coldest game in Soldier Field history. Okay? I think it was under 10 degrees at that game. This is on December 14th. Y'all can look it up. Okay? I watched the Bears play in those elements in person. I sat in the crowd in sub 10 degree temperatures. Those are real temperatures, mind you, not wind chill. Real temperatures, sub 10 degrees. I sat there and watched them for 3 hours against a good Browns defense move the ball up and down the field with ease. Chicago was no worse for wear playing in that cold weather. Caleb Williams made one of the most unbelievable passes of the season that day. I saw it with my own two eyes, okay? I felt the bitter cold Chicago air myself. And I saw how completely unprepared for it the Browns were. Now, that has more to do with the Browns just being the Browns in that scenario because they play in cold weather too. But the Rams don't. The Bears have been playing in this weather for months. They've been playing at Lambeau and then at Chicago and then at Chicago again. And they played at night against Green Bay last week, and they're going to do it again on Sunday. This is not new to them, all right? It's not new to them. This is new for the Rams, playing in weather this cold, a team from Los Angeles who plays indoors anyway. Y'all live in a desert and you play indoors. You think you're about to be ready for 8 degrees? I don't think so. The Bears are 3.5-point home underdogs, and not only do I have them covering, I have the Chicago Bears in the NFC Championship game. So long as they don't continue to view last week's win as their Super Bowl. That's the main thing that freaks me out. But the Rams, they worry me. Everybody's on the Rams, but they worry me. We know their special teams stink. And are special teams traditionally a problem in cold weather games? Yep. We know that their quarterback, who although he played in Detroit for a lot of years and in the NFC North, most of his NFC North games were played indoors. And we know, does that dude have a statistical drop-off when his temperature gets a little chillier? Yep. That's two checks, okay? We know that their strength is passing the ball to Puka Nacua and Davante Adams, but is that going to be compromised in this weather? Yep. We know that the Bears' strength is their secondary in taking the football away. So does the Rams' strength play into the Bears' strength? Yep. Sure does. So when I'm looking at all this lineup, you know, and you throw on top of that the Bears seeming like a team of destiny, and think about the Rams, man. They had to fly to Seattle from LA, the third to last game of the season. Then they had to fly home. Then they had to jump on a plane and fly to Atlanta. They lost both of those games, mind you. Then they came home. They stayed at home and played a garbage Arizona Cardinals team. Then they had to get on a plane and fly all the way to Charlotte across country, fly back. Now they got to get on a plane again and fly all the way to Chicago and play in frigid temperatures. That is a problem. If they win this game, I mean, I know everybody loves Puka Nacua, and he's amazing. 129 catches, 1,700 yards, 10 touchdowns. He's putting up Smith and Jigba numbers, okay? He's awesome. But Kyren Williams, who ran for 1,252 yards this year and 10 scores, he's the difference maker in this game. If the Rams don't run the ball, they will not win. That is their only hope. I'm not banking on Matt Stafford and that passing attack to carry the day in that situation, in that weather. I don't see it. So you couple the outdoor thing with the weather, with the travel, with the special teams, with the Bears' strengths being what they are, and Caleb Williams being the Iceman all of a sudden, doing the Trae Young celebration, throwing one of the most unbelievable passes you'll see on that fourth down against Green Bay, and then leading them on a miraculous comeback yet again. You got to kill these Bears where they stand, man. And they got something magical going on at home right now. I'm taking the Bears. I'm taking the Bears. I'm doing it again. It's called the Black Man. That's not something that I would advise you to do, boys and girls, often, is put your faith in the Chicago Bears, but here we are. So to recap quickly, the Broncos are 1.5-point favorites against Buffalo. I got the Bills winning and covering. The Seahawks are 7-point favorites against the 49ers. I have the 49ers winning and covering. So two road teams winning off the bat. The Patriots are 3-point favorites at home against the Texans. I have the Texans covering, but the Patriots winning. And then the Bears are 3.5-point home dogs to the Rams. I have the Bears winning and covering. The Bears got a lot of things in their advantage, man. They got the home dog thing cooking too. I mean, like, there's a lot there. The only thing I'm really worried about is that last year was their Super Bowl. If they can psychologically get over that, I think they'll be fine. And they'll win. So, AFC, Bills versus Pats. NFC, Bears versus Niners. Should be fun. It will be fun. Thank you guys for listening. Jay Hicks, Hip Hop Sports Report. Oh, one more to tie it on real quick before we go. Give me the old-ass Indiana Hoosiers to win and cover against the Hurricanes from Miami. It's an 8.5-point spread. It's kind of a big spread on Monday night, but I'll take the Hoosiers to win and cover and to complete their magical, majestic carpet ride of a season. Thank you all for listening to the preseason podcast of the year. We'll be back next week, either in podcast form or written form, to talk about the conference championship and maybe break down what went wrong for the teams that are sitting at home like you and me. Thank you, guys. We'll check you out soon. We out of here. Peace.